Accession number 19638, reel 3.
It's the Charles Jordan, reel 3. You belong to the Royal Artillery Regiment. Could you explain the battalion that you're in and the setup?
Well, with the Royal Artillery, there's nothing like a battalion. It is just classed as a regiment. My particular regiment was the 18th Coast Regiment, comprising of 9.2 and 6-inch guns, fixed emplacements. That is manned in the regiment by two coastal batteries. The one I was in was 30th Coast. The 6-inch was the 35th Coast Regiment. Battery, rather. I'm sorry. And our role was just to protect attack from the sea.
Would you describe a typical day in your life then?
Well, as a gunner, mine was not quite like the other gunners, because I also did clerical work. I was a battery clerk at one stage and a BQMS clerk at another. That did not prevent me, or did not mean that I didn't have to do my guard duties or my specialist training on the gunnery. When there was a practice shoot, I still had to take part in it. But as regards drills during the day, I would otherwise engage on the clerical duties. Well, one thing about life in the barracks, it was generally very humdrum, and I personally used to look forward to the days when we had practice shoots, which meant that I was out from the office, stationed well away from the brigade, because my task was to follow targets and inform brigade headquarters course, speed, and block square point of target. The outpost was well away from headquarters, way up in the hills of New Territories, and we met. Our manning party consisted of four men. So that was the only sort of break we had from normal humdrum duties during the days.
Did you have any expectation of hostilities occurring?
No, the outbreak of the Japanese invasion was a complete surprise to all of us. There was no indication whatsoever. In fact, we got very, very little news from England. We were very, very isolated in every way. You had no newspapers, wireless communication. I think the only person we heard on the wireless was Lord Haw Haw, and that was about the only thing we heard. If we wanted any news, we had to go into Hong Kong and read outdated newspapers, English newspapers, such as the Daily Mirror, Overseas Daily Mirror, which gave you the month's previous news, and that was the only news of home that we received. And of course, that was always a month late. The the announcement of hostilities against Japan, I can't give any specific date. The only indication we had that war was going to, that we were at war, was approximately one or two days after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Then our commanding officer announced that we were now at war against Japan, and we were then sent to our battle stations.
Were they on the coast? Were they on the coast?
The guns that we man are fixed defense guns. In other words, they're right on the coast itself, because they were set there because of possible attack from the sea. The guns were manned by the main gun teams in the batteries concerned, but you had specialists manning outposts, RDF, range directors, which were maybe 30, 40 miles away, 30 miles away anyhow, on the hillsides of the new territories. That was my base. So during the actual hostilities, until we were told to withdraw from there, I was not in contact, completely in contact with my own regiment. When the Japs actually made the attack, it came from China, not from the sea. So consequently, my position in the battery was surplus to requirements, and I was withdrawn from my post back to Fort Stanley, where the remainder of the time I spent as an infantryman, as a guard of the barracks of the fort, really, out on the perimeter with rifle. So then that was my hostilities, actually, only hostilities.
Did that feel strange?
It did seem strange, but the only actual incident that I fired my rifle was to clear out the Japanese from the Repulse Bay Hotel, which was in our part of the Hong Kong island. And I had to go there in support of a company of Gurkhas, because the Japanese had infiltrated onto the island, and they had occupied Repulse Bay Hotel, which we promptly cleared out. And that was my only, I assume what you would call it, wartime activity. From then onwards, of course, I became a prisoner of war.
Could you relive and share with us the experience of how this came about?
Well, we had information and that the Japanese had occupied Fort Repulse Bay Hotel, and a company of Gurkhas would be trying to retake it, and any assistance available would be appreciated. Our commanding officer, as we were surplus requirements in the Fort Stanley, we were sent in support of the Gurkhas in the actual, the clearing of the Repulse Bay Hotel. And the Gurkhas were wonderful. Really were.
Just tell us a little bit more about them.
My impressions of the clearing out of the Repulse Bay Hotel are rather strange, really. It was just as if you were taking part in a gangster film, sort of running from corridor to corridor and looking round the corners and aiming your rifle. That's the only definition of that I can recall of what it was like actually in a hotel. My main impression was the efficiency of the little Gurkhas, how active they were and how ruthless they were. And I will always admire them. After 3 weeks of hostility, we had instructions from command headquarters in Hong Kong that the island had capitulated and we were now prisoners of war. Our officer commanding instructed us to take only personal belongings which we could carry in our haversacks. We then marched from Fort Stanley into Hong Kong, where we shipped on ferries to Kowloon and incarcerated in what was the Middlesex Regiment barracks. Eventually there was over 6,000 prisoners of war in that camp. Conditions were very, very bad. We were fed just boiled rice, nothing else, and very little of that too. And within 2 weeks, men were dying of beriberi, which is malnutrition and dysentery, because they weren't getting the proteins and the food, the vitamins from the food we were getting. This was alleviated, and I think it was a wonderful thing, by the medical teams in the camp who ordered a search amongst all inmates for medical supplies. They eventually found one Hong Kong volunteer with a very large jar of yeast white tablets. And they had the bright idea of fermenting the yeast white tablets by means of the water and rice ground up into a powder. Eventually they had numerous 50-gallon drums of this yeast, which all members of the camp was given approximately a cupful a day. I think that saved hundreds of lives, although we were losing about 9 men a day in the camp from malnutrition.
How were you affected personally during these few months?
Well, things were so bad in the camp. You can't really pinpoint any particular incident, except the one of survival. And my own solution was to live for the day. And I think that was the only way that I was able to come through that period of time in the camp.
I'm interested in whether the men helped each other and talked among themselves about the war and chances of survival and so forth.
It was a strange thing. None of my colleagues or fellow servicemen ever talked about whether they were going to survive or what they were going to do. In that camp, there were so many of us, you couldn't really pinpoint anything. It was only later, in the prisoner of war camp in Japan, that you had a sense of comradeship. In the camp, one did not know what day of the week it was, had no sense of time. The only thing that gave you a sense of time was the actual removal of 1,000-odd men for shipment to Japan. The party I was on was 1,800 men, 600 from my own regiment, being shepherded onto this Japanese cargo vessel and being imprisoned in the holds with the battened down. We were on that vessel for 2 days with just one meal of rice and buckets of water.
Can I just ask you, how did they go about shepherding you onto the boat?
They were fairly well organized. They just picked out certain infantry regiments and Royal Artillery regiment and said, X number of men will be taken to Japan. And we were lined up and marched to the docks and marched on the docks as much as possible, keeping to our own units. I'm sorry. It's all right. So our regiment was put in the afterhold of the vessel, which was called the Lisma Maru. And we set out for Hong Kong, from Hong Kong to Japan for... We were in the hole for those 2 days. All we had was one meal of rice a day and water for drinking. While en route, we suddenly had heard and felt an explosion, which was an American torpedo penetrating the boiler room of the Lisma Maru. The boiler room was bulkhead between the boardroom and us, who were in the after hold, so we were in a very precarious position. The vessel didn't sink straight away. They kept it afloat for approximately 24 hours. The way they did this was by lowering hand pumps down into our particular hold, and we were forced to man them right through that period. Eventually, it was taking water faster than we could pump it clear, and the vessel started to sink by the stern. There was no way out for us in that hold at that time. Eventually, help came from other prisoners in the forward holds of the vessel. They broke loose and unbattened the hatch covers of our hold. And the number that got out of that hold was actually 200, so we lost 400 Royal Artillerymen in that one incident from drowning. I was one of the fortunate ones. I did manage to get out, and my first thoughts were wonderful fresh air, and looking around me and seeing the state of the vessel, I realized the thing for me to do was to get away from it as quickly as possible. So I jumped overboard and swam. There were hundreds of us in the water, artillerymen, Middlesex Regiment, Royal Scots, and one or two engineers and Royal Naval personnel. Once we were in the water, it was a matter of self-preservation. And at first, the Japanese in the naval escort fired upon all of us in the water. They must have had instructions to cease fire, because nothing happened after a while. I was in the water for approximately 10 to 12 hours. I swam towards some islands, some Chinese islands, and got within about 300 or 400 yards of it, got swept out to sea again. But I didn't swim all the time. I managed to get hold of a cork float, which helped me to stay afloat. And the next thing I remember is somebody hauling me onto a Carly float with about 12 others, all prisoners of war. And I remember hanging onto that and suddenly being pulled off and hauled into a Chinese fishing junk in the hold and taken ashore along with 76 other people. The Chinese headman of the village was very, very good. He gave us rice and sweet potato to eat and water to drink. But unfortunately, that was all he could do. The Japanese came ashore the next day and put us on to a naval trawler, which eventually landed us at Moji, which is in Japan. I was one of 30 that was taken into hospital with exposure and dysentery. Of 30 members, only 10 came out of that hospital. And I was then transported by train to join the original party in the prison war camp, actually in Osaka. Is that right?
Could you bear to go back to the moment when you jumped off that ship and what led up to it?
Jumping off the ship was my personal feelings. One feeling of glorious freedom, although only temporary. One of the peculiar things is it's that I did not think about at that particular time was the China Sea is a hotbed for sharks. It never, in all the time I was in the water, entered my head that I was vulnerable to the sharks. And it wasn't until very late on I wondered why we were so lucky. Obviously the sharks had been busy because there was so many bodies floating around, but it never even entered my head or frightened me in any way, because I never even thought about it. The thing that I am very, very angry about was the attitude of the captain of that vessel and his crew and the guards of evacuating, leaving the ship and leaving us battened in the holds. It was obviously they did not want us to survive. But when so many survived, they must have received instructions to start picking us back up again to continue our journey. But I'll never forgive them for that. I think that was really atrocious.
Can you describe the scene for you when you got out of the hold?
Yes, I can. I know. The actual release from the hold, I know I was in, crushed in with a body of men all trying to get out. And I came from out of that hold like a cork from a bottle. Just the pressure of bodies. And standing on the deck, and after being in that stinking hold for all that length of time, the fresh air and the blue sky and the I sort of paused and took a deep breath, then realised what predicament I was in, and then I just jumped for it and started swimming.
Did you have to walk up quite a lot of stairs and...
I don't recall it. I know it, the Middlesex, I heard account afterwards, the Middlesex and the Royal Scots broke out their holds, and one exit from that after hold was a bulkhead door which was clamped that come under the bridge housing of the vessel. And all I recall is not even touching the cowling on the door, the door cowling, just coming out of there in the crush of bodies.
Were you on your own at that stage? Were you on your own?
No, there was 200 of us in that hold that got out, and you can imagine it was every man for himself coming out of the hold. So many of my companions didn't even make it, my regiment.
You mean they didn't manage to jump off the ship?
They did not even get out of the hold because it was sinking by the stern, you see. The forward holds were up in the air. The hold I was in, was when I got out, was partially underwater. And on that vessel alone, we had, out of the 1,800, only 800 and approximately 840 or 820 survived. That's the actual sinking. So
that must have been very upsetting.
Well, we didn't